From Studio F, high atop Feibusch Media World Domination Headquarters in Rochester, New York, it is the Top of the Tower podcast. I'm Scott Feibusch, your host here at Feibusch Media, and this is episode number 10. A couple of things are going to be different this week and next. I'm actually on the road, overseas, in fact, visiting England and Germany, doing a bunch of mostly non-radio stuff, in fact. So this week, we're going to give you a little bit of a news update, especially on some things happening with the cross-ownership rule. And then next week, we will bring you a little more of the interviews that we did at the AES and NAB New York shows a couple of weeks ago. And then we will be back in the saddle with brand new live episodes. One thing, of course, that is developing right now, perhaps by the time you hear this, is that we are on pins and needles waiting for an announcement from CBS as to where those remaining CBS and Entercom stations are going. We know that there are still stations that have to be spun off in San Francisco, in Sacramento, in Seattle, and most of all in Boston, where there are five stations that are being spun: WBZ-AM, WBZ-FM, the sports hub, WZLX, the classic rock station, WRKO, the talk station, and WKAF, the R&B station on 97.7. We're still waiting to hear who those buyers or swappers will be, what kind of deal CBS will do. As we find out more and as we're able to while traveling, we will try to bring you an update. And of course, we advise you to go visit radioinsight.com because Lance will be keeping second-by-second updates going on this. As soon as we know anything at all, we will bring that information to you. The holiday season, of course, is upon us, and that means that we are seeing the first Christmas stations signing on around the region. As has been the case for quite a few years, Equity Broadcasting on the Jersey Shore jumped on at first. They flipped WEZW down in Wildwood, New Jersey, EZ93.1. A week or so ago, there are two stations now fighting on the east end of Long Island to kind of outdo each other. They both flipped as of Halloween Day. That would be WELJ 104.7 and 102.5 WBAZ, two competing stations. WELJ, of course, had launched as a Christmas music stunt last fall as that station got purchased from the Cumulus Spinoff Trust. So we'll be keeping an eye on that. I'm sure there will be quite a few more of those and most of the usual suspects, stations like WMJX perhaps in Boston, certainly WLTW in New York, WBEB in Philadelphia. They will all be doing their flips in the days to come. So keep an eye on Radio Insight. Lance will be keeping track of that as well. We will be keeping an eye on what's happening at the FCC because the next piece of the rules... We, of course, will be keeping an eye on what's happening at the FCC where deregulation is concerned now that we've gotten past the main studio rule changes, and those have now been codified and published in the Federal Register, and the waiting period begins for those to take effect and for us to see what actually happens and whether some of our speculation last week turns out to be correct. But what we do know is that there is more coming, but maybe not enough to satisfy a lot of people. What's happening next, at least according to Commissioner Ajit Pai, is that there will be a vote coming up probably pretty soon on changing some aspects of the cross-ownership rule. Some of the more avid deregulators out there are arguing, and have been arguing for a while, that the next thing that should happen is that cross-ownership bans and ownership caps should simply go away. That if you want to own a daily newspaper and a radio station, hey, that's fine, you ought to be able to do that. If you want to own eight radio stations in a market and have them all be FM, you ought to be able to do that too. If you want to own 12 radio stations in a market, hey, maybe you should be allowed to do that. It is not going to go quite that far. And that was actually a little bit of a surprise, some of the ways that Ajit Pai says things will still be restricted. One thing that he definitely wants to finally get to a vote is this ban on cross-ownership between daily newspapers and radio and TV stations. This is an interesting beast, in part because so many radio and TV stations trace their heritage back to daily newspapers. If you go back and you look at who was starting broadcast stations in the 1920s and then who was starting TV stations in the 40s and 50s, one of the biggest categories for obvious reasons was the daily newspaper. So when you're talking about the Buffalo News and WBEN in Buffalo, whether you're talking about the cross-ownership that existed between the Syracuse newspapers and WSYR, whether it was WHEC and the Gannett papers here in Rochester, and it was like this all over the country it made sense that the local media magnates who were behind the daily newspaper, a lot of them thought quite correctly that the future was in electronic media. They wanted to get into it. And so they put radio stations on the air, or in some cases bought into radio and TV stations later on. And all was well and good up until the 1970s. And you can really trace the current newspaper broadcast cross-ownership ban to the Nixon White House. Nixon was looking for ways to get back, in particular, against the Washington Post, and they owned broadcast facilities in Washington, WTOP radio and TV. And so it's no coincidence that under the Nixon FCC, all of a sudden the rules started to tighten to say not only that you could not create new newspaper and broadcast cross-ownerships, but also that it would be a good idea if the existing ones were to start getting dissolved. And things took an interesting turn there, too, because a lot of them were grandfathered. Sure, there were areas where stations were spun off. The Washington Post saw the writing on the wall, especially as their license renewals were coming due. And they did a swap with the Detroit News. The Detroit News went back to the very earliest days of broadcasting. And Station 8MK, which became WWJ in Detroit all the way back in 1920, they swapped that off to Post Newsweek. And in exchange, the Evening News Association in Detroit, which eventually became part of Gannett, ended up with the Post stations in Washington, D.C., and particularly their TV station, Channel 9, which is still in the hands of Gannett's spinoff now, Tegna, as WUSA-TV. But there were a lot, as I mentioned, that never spun off. The Tribune interests in Chicago never spun off. The Milwaukee Journal and WTMJ never spun off. The New York Times was grandfathered to keep WQXR. The Boston Globe had their TV station in Boston, WKBG, which became WLVI. And then there were other cases where things weren't handled quite as equitably. You know, of course, if you've ever followed the history of Boston TV, the long fight that the Boston Herald Traveler had to try to keep WHDH-TV, which, of course, they lost in 1972 when created the whole new WCVB, and which eventually led more or less to the demise of the Boston Herald Traveler. The remains of that paper ended up with the Boston Record-American, which eventually belonged to Rupert Murdoch, who went through his own cross-ownership fight to try to keep WFXT-TV in Boston, ended up losing that as well, and had to spin off the newspaper in the end. So this is something that has been argued over for quite a while. And of course, in recent years, as the daily newspaper has ceased to be the media giant that it used to be in a lot of these communities, there are a lot of people arguing, I think quite correctly, that the balance of power has shifted, that even if you could have made a legitimate case in the 1970s and into the 1980s to say, hey, we have a new concern about ownership concentration, and we want to address that by trying to keep newspapers separately owned from broadcast stations, that ship has sailed. The newspaper in most of these communities is, if not hanging on for dear life, at least on a downward swing. And in the meantime, there are all kinds of other categories of media organization that didn't even exist when this cross-ownership ban went into effect that do exist now and that have absolutely no restrictions on being allowed to own a broadcast facility. If you, for instance, happen to be Amazon, let's say, nobody is stopping Amazon from buying broadcast facilities. It's not necessarily part of their business model. But they could. Google could buy broadcast facilities if they wanted to. And I don't think anybody would argue that they're not a much, much, much bigger media organization now, certainly a much bigger piece of the pie than any individual newspaper is. So this is a rule in a lot of cases that probably has outlived its usefulness. At the same time, you kind of have to wonder now what newspapers are going to be interested in buying broadcast or vice versa. We saw just a few years ago a lot of those remaining grandfathered newspaper broadcast cross-ownerships end simply because these media companies realized, hey, we can do better with investors if we spin off the relatively high-growth broadcast properties and digital properties away from the very slow-growth or declining newspaper properties. And so you saw, for instance, the deal that Gannett did in which they spun off the broadcast pieces into Tegna, and then the newspaper pieces went into a new company that got the Gannett name. And then Tegna went off and did deals with Belo and ended up getting the Belo TV stations, for instance. And then after that, you had a bigger deal that happened with Scripps, where Gannett ended up getting a bunch of the Scripps newspapers. The broadcast piece of that ended up merging in with Scripps, and so those are all now the Scripps broadcast stations. And what was left of the Scripps newspaper group ended up going over to Gannett, and so that became part of a larger Gannett group. And then, even more recently than that, we've seen Tribune splitting their newspaper operations off to Tronc, and then the Tribune broadcast operations, which may or may not be on their way over to Sinclair, and we'll get to that a little bit more in just a moment. So if all of those companies were rushing to separate print from broadcast, who might be interested? I think primarily you're going to see smaller markets where this becomes a thing, where you have broadcast owners in a small market who are competing against a newspaper that's kind of on a shoestring too, who may look at the situation and say, you know what, if we were allowed to simply buy this newspaper and get some of their attention, get some of their readership, and combine advertising sales with our broadcast and digital properties, we could have something here. So I think you may see some of these smaller newspapers really kind of getting into this before you see any larger print organizations trying to get into broadcast or vice versa. That ship probably has largely sailed at this point. So that's one piece of cross-ownership that probably will be gotten rid of. But then there are some other pieces of cross-ownership that surprisingly are going to be allowed to stay. Apparently there is going to be no move from the FCC, at least not right now, to get rid of the overall radio ownership caps. You are currently allowed in the largest markets to own 8 radio stations. You will not be allowed to own more than 8 radio stations, even after these next set of votes. The bigger surprise, perhaps, is that there's also no move to get rid of the ownership subcaps. There was a press by a lot of broadcasters to say, you know what, especially now that AM stations are on FM translators in a lot of places anyway, does it really make sense to hold to this rule that said you can own a maximum of 5 in one service? So you can't own more than 5 AM stations in a market, or you can't own more than 5 FM stations. The FCC is not changing that. For whatever reason, they're going to let that one sit. That, if anything, could end up being a little more frustrating to some AM broadcasters. There are a few groups like Multicultural who would love very much to own 6 or 7 or 8 AM stations in any given market because they've found good business in that niche, serving smaller niche ethnic and linguistic communities. And at least with this current rule change, they're not going to have the opportunity to change that. So it'll be interesting to see what kind of pushback there is from them. And then there's another very specific rule cap that doesn't apply to very many broadcasters. But one in particular, Connoisseur, was really looking to get this one lifted. This is the cap that said that if you have an embedded Nielsen market, so Nielsen, for instance, takes the enormous greater New York City market that stretches out to the eastern tip of Long Island and deep into New Jersey and Connecticut, and they designate several sub-markets within that. So there are breakouts from the New York market that cover, for instance, Middlesex, Somerset, and Union counties in New Jersey. There's one that covers Stamford, Norwalk in Connecticut. There's one that covers Long Island. And the FCC has long held that you cannot exceed the ownership cap not only in those embedded markets, but you can't have a total ownership within all of those embedded markets that exceeds the cap for the market in which they're embedded. Which means that if you have a cluster of stations in Connecticut, as Connoisseur does, and if you have a few stations on Long Island, as Connoisseur does, and you're then presented with the opportunity, for instance, to acquire Beasley's stations that used to be Greater Media in central New Jersey, as much as those may fit your suburban New York business model, they would also exceed the ownership cap in the greater New York City market, and therefore that's not going to be allowed. We'll see if Connoisseur ends up finding a way to fight back against that. To my mind, at least, it seems like something that ought to be addressed because there's no reason to think that having a bunch of stations in New Jersey is going to compete with a bunch of stations in Connecticut or on Long Island, and there's not a lot of reason to think that the stations at the core of the market in New York City that are owned by the bigger players like CBS, soon to be Entercom, or iHeart, that they're really going to be looking to penetrate the suburbs. In fact, most of those companies have sold off their suburban holdings. So we'll see if there's more coming from Connoisseur about that. So those are a few of the things that we're looking at right now with the ownership cap. We will be keeping an eye on that when we get back from our travels. We will, of course, again, be keeping a very careful eye on what happens with the Entercom and CBS spinoffs. And again, keep an eye on RadioInsight.com as well as our social media feeds. We will try as best connectivity holds up to try to bring you updates as soon as we know anything at all about that. And don't forget also that we are brought to you once again by the Fibush.com Tower Site Calendar. The 2018 edition is now shipping. It's available. Check it out at our website, Fibush.com. You can get one delivered to you right away, as a matter of fact, and have all of your towers ready to show up on your wall for 2018. It's something that's a great gift for that engineer. If you can't think of just the right thing to get for that special radio person in your life, the TowerSite calendar at fivebush.com would be a good place to go. We also have the Broadcast Historian calendar that's also been popular that John Schneider does. That's available too. And that will do it for this edition of Top of the Tower. Join us again next week. We'll have some best ofs from our tours in New York City, as we were talking to some great broadcasters about what they are up to. So you'll hear some of that next week on Top of the Tower. For now, I'm Scott Feibusch. Thanks for being with us.